everyone, and welcome back to Phone Show Chat. I'm here with Joe. Hello, Joe.
Hello there. I'm eating my chips.
Eating your chips. Very good. I wish I had some chips. That sounds lovely. With loads of vinegar all over them. Oh, yeah. Oh yes.
Yeah. Very big chunky ones they are.
Oh, yeah, lovely. We can't be doing with these stupid McDonald's things that are like chopstick size. No.
No, none of that rubbish.
Size. So anyway, we're here today with our fourth drop-in. I decided to change the name of it unilaterally, without any reference to anyone else, from Joe and Ted's live, or whatever it was called, to the PSC drop-in, because I reckon that it's more like a drop-in than a live anything, because it's not really live, but it's only live for those that are here. So yeah. Very confusing.
Yeah. That makes
we
sense.
Might one day. Well, we might one day find a way around that and merge the Nomad Tech Project model with our model and do something like, I don't know, we'll work on it in the weeks and months to come.
But
in the meantime, it's PSC 898, and we hope that you will drop in and have a little chat with us, and drop out whenever you've had enough having a little chat with us. And so we'll open the show up. It's Monday the 8th of June, and we do have, oh, look, talking of No Man Tech Project, who's first in the gate but your great mate, it's Sam. Hello, Sam. Oh.
Hey, no. What's up, Al?
Oh. Here he is.
Are you skiving from work?
Yeah, I'm working right now in a meeting, but I thought I would pop in and check on you, mates, and see how you guys are doing.
Excellent. Lovely to have you in the show. Welcome to us. You're the first one here, and we haven't really spoken about anything much, so we'll do that now. Is there anything you'd like to talk about, Sam? I watched the Nomad Tech Project last night, but as Joe's told you before, I never watch it live, hardly ever. I like to sit down in front of my telly with a beer about 10:30 and watch it then.
I would highly recommend that anybody having to sit through an hour of that should probably be either on the way to or pretty close to inebriation before you attempt to try to start to listen to our silliness. So if you're with a beer, that's a good place to start, if you ask me. Yeah. But yeah, no, I'm really jealous of Joe's Moto Fold. I really love to get a hold of one. But that's sounds like it's getting pretty good reviews and people seem to like it, and actually calling it one of the best ones available in the US. So, I mean, that's pretty cool. So I'm a little jealous, but happy.
I'm with you on that. I would like to get my hands on one, but Joe keeps telling me, don't worry, because you've got the candy bar version of it anyway, with the signature. So you don't need the fold. And actually, while it's still the price it is, I probably don't. But Joe, you reckon that the signature is all but a folding razor, don't you?
Yeah, pretty much it is, because same chipset, same camera system. Yeah, it's pretty much the same device, isn't it? Unless you want that extra big canvas and bigger battery, of course.
Yeah. So Sam, how did you get on with in the end, after you'd explored your OnePlus update? Was there anything gripping in there?
No, I haven't really had a chance to really dive into it, but it was just like, the show notes were like super, super, I mean, the release notes were nuts. So it was kind of like, I just, you know, a lot of AI stuff, and it kind of, so I haven't really dove into much of it. I need to actually sit down and actually read release notes. I actually don't do that. I know I'm a terrible, you know, content creator. It's like, I don't want to read through 7,000 pieces of release notes. I work in the field right now with releases and deployments, and I don't know. It's sometimes so I haven't had a chance to really dive into the feature, but okay. I'm assuming it's going to be stuff like, you know, photos and AI and Pixel Studio and the generative kind of thing. I was telling Joe about our RV Jesus thing I had generated through the AI. So I'm assuming it's kind of in that sphere, you know, the regular other stuff, that improvements and process improvements. It seems to be fine. Well, I haven't had any bugs in the last day or two.
Well, at least you've got May's security update as well. But we'll look forward to some feedback on forthcoming Nomad Tech Projects. In the meantime, your hero Steve is here, Sam. So
yes.
Hi, Steve.
Hey there. Can you hear me okay?
Yep.
We're good.
Yep. It's like being back on Nomad Tech Project, except I've got the kind of the same guys live chatting along with Ted watching on his TV, but chipping in and hosting. It's surreal.
So
just
yeah,
quickly
sandwich
on
chips.
the,
Sorry, go
sorry,
on, Joe.
Ted. Just quickly on the update notes. It's quite funny. Like I always want to see good update notes and exactly what's coming. But then, like Sam, I rarely read them as well. But there is one company I think do it really well, and that's Nothing. I don't know if you guys
Yes,
have seen them.
absolutely. It's great, isn't it? It's just like Cyanogen Mod used to be. And you sit there reading through the stuff, and it's written in plain, ordinary English, and it's point by point, and it comes out with the update. You don't have to start going digging around online to find the notes. And yeah, I agree with you. Nothing do it really, really well. But I think that it looks like Sam, OnePlus do the same, do they?
Yeah, they're pretty extensive. I wouldn't say they're easy for me to read if I was just going through it, but sometimes I don't know how this works in the UK, but in the United States, when you vote on initiatives and government, they always write what you're voting on, right? This is Proposition 4. And you read it, and I'm like, no human being could read any of this. You have to be a lawyer to read something. I'm like, I don't even know what I'm voting on half the time. It's just like it's so jargoned and legalese, so I don't think it's as easy as Nothing, but I don't think it's super terrible to read through. It's just extensive, and it's just like sometimes they use the same kind of jargonistic descriptions of, process improvements and battery improvements. Like, what does that really mean? Does that really mean anything? Yeah, I guess is it noticeably different, or is it just kind of using the same kind of language that a lot of these manufacturers do for their release notes, which is fine. It was just this one was pretty extensive from what I saw,
Yeah,
which is good.
absolutely. Steve, any thoughts on that?
What are we talking about? I'm catching up here, guys.
Oh,
What are
sorry.
we talking
Oh,
about?
last night on the show, probably after you dropped out, Joe was talking about his OnePlus updates and the fact that we get, with some manufacturers, we get a really good list of change log and stuff. I just wondered if you had any examples or anything to chip into that topic.
I would complete wholeheartedly endorse having clear and clear change log and not too long. I completely agree. If you've got more than about 2 or 3 pages worth, even my eyes glaze over. I'm just watching the Apple keynote, WWDC, and all the changes to their operating systems. And after about 5 or 10 minutes of buzzwords and changes, you think, okay, just move on. Give me an example, and I'll use it for myself one day and find all this stuff out. So much of this stuff should just be under the hood. It's better. It's faster. It can do more. Leave it at that. Half a dozen bullet points, and that's good for me.
Sure. Okay. Welcome to Jeremy Harpham. Hello, Jeremy.
Hello, Ted and Joe and Steve. Good and Sam as well. Good to see you all here.
Yeah, cool to have you on
Beautiful.
board. What have you been up to? What have you been up to, Jeremy?
Oh, busy at work, but thought I'd drop in to remind people about the meetup in
Oh yeah,
London
the
on
pub
the.
meet. Yeah.
The pub meet in London at Pendrell's Oak near Holborn Station on the 20th of June, and I'll be there from about 12:30. I think Joe was going to rock up about 2:30, and we'll be. The pub's great. It's huge. It has tea, coffee, food, all good prices. Beer, of course. I missed that one off, didn't I?
And Jeremy's buying.
Not sure about that bit, but we'll see.
So that's on Saturday, the 20th of June.
June, that's right.
We've got a PSC 2 days after that, so perhaps we'll get some feedback, and particularly if Joe turns up and doesn't go off sick like last time, the cad.
Yeah,
Boo. We'll see if we can capture a bit of audio for those that attend.
Yeah,
yeah,
that was really
definitely.
good. I think there was about five people there last time, and that little bit of audio you did was really useful. And I think the feedback I got was that people really liked that. So cool.
Cool.
Sam, are you going to come over to the pub meet? He's gone. Oh no, he's muted himself. The age-old problem. I'll mute myself and then
Oh
I'll forget to.
no,
Oh, there he's
I
back.
was stepped away for a second. Yeah, no, it's a bit of a commute for me. I would love to go, but yeah, I have this logistical problem of an ocean to get there, so it's a little bit too far to walk. So I'll
Ah,
have to just.
it's just a pond.
Yeah, I'll just drop on in eventually. But yeah, I've always would love to go to those pub meets. If I'm actually in country one time, I'll definitely try to time a trip around that if I could. That would be pretty cool.
That would be good. Fun, yeah.
It's funny you say it's just the pond, because Sam's previous podcast was called Across the Pondcast.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. Was that another tech podcast?
He did it with another British bloke called Matt. I'll let Sam tell the story, actually.
It was basically the exact same format. It was just two-man interview. And on that show, we actually had a lot of high-end guests. I mean, at one point, we had like Super Saf and John Rettinger. And it was kind of an interesting thing, because it's great to talk to these folks. But on our show, I don't know if you've paid attention, we're kind of a little bit coarse sometimes. And we like to kind of just talk like normal. I don't like a regular interview show. I like it that it's a little bit more conversational. But when you're at people that level of that high, they have to be very careful about their image. Like, they can't just go on there and just say whatever. And I'm not trying to jam them up, but you know, during the course of a conversation, they may be a little looser on what they're saying. And of course, if somebody gets upset because they have millions of followers, nobody listens to us, right? So it's like, if I say something that upsets people, it's like, you know, they make feedback. But so it's kind of a catch-22, right? So you want to be having a good conversation, but they're a lot more guarded and image conscious. So they're very guarded about what they say, and they try to stay away from topics that may cause a lot of consternation with folks. So it's kind of cool, but and also I just like to talk to regular people. So it's cool to have large guests like that back then, but as it just doesn't drive numbers. Really, people don't engage. It's not like they're going to listen to our show and go, oh, let's start listening to this podcast. It just doesn't happen that way. So this time around, it's just more smaller creators and just Joe and I just talking. So a little bit of a change of how we approach the show, but pretty much the same format as what it was back then and what it is now.
It's great. I really like the show. And it's very relaxed, and I approve of that. I really enjoy watching it. Steve?
I just wanted to say that I completely agree. The higher up you go in terms of a company or the importance of the person and so forth, the less they're able to say and the more guarded they are. Back when I was a full-time journalist, I go to numerous events and interview CEOs and so forth, and you just got absolutely nothing useful out of them. It was just PR and guarded answers. If you actually want to get interesting conversation, you go to the people who are our level, but with a greater understanding and perhaps more expertise. Those are the people you want to talk to, not the people higher up. And yes, some of the bigger creators, they might as well be higher ups and CEOs, because they've got staff who report to them and they can't mess up their brand. So completely agree.
Yeah, good stuff. I really do enjoy watching it. And particularly when you let Joe get a word in edgeways, Sam.
I knew that was coming. That's fair. I can handle the feedback. That's fair. I'm trying to do better. I mean, it's a development opportunity is what they would say at work, right? So yeah, a growth opportunity. Yeah.
Jeremy, what phone have you got your SIM card in right now?
Oh, well, that has changed actually, because my main SIM is now in my Fold 7.
Ah, okay.
So I'm.
What did it come from?
The S25 Ultra.
Okay, so you've gone folding.
I've gone folding, yep.
Okay, so you'll be tuning into Shane's podcast, YouTube videos then.
Yeah, I do watch his. He's been looking at the Motorola most recently, hasn't he?
We were just talking about that. Sam was talking about how jealous he was about not being able to get hold of one, and so am I to some degree. But you're right. Shane is all over that at the moment, and he seems to think it's the best thing since sliced bread. But yeah, do go on.
I was just about to say it's a really interesting phone, but I've been let down before by Moto updates that never arrived on phones, and I certainly wouldn't want to buy a Fold from them and find that happens. So I hope they stick to their promises, really do.
Yeah, there is the mentality of that, of course, and I think it affects us nerds and geeks more than anyone else in the universe, frankly. My SIM card is in a phone at the moment that is Android 15 on it, and it's not going to get any more Android updates. And I'm trying to teach myself to just chill about it and not worry about it. You don't need all these bells and whistles and AI everything going on, you can your phone in your pocket can be simple and straightforward. I know that we're expected to be pushing the envelope on shows like this and testing out all the new stuff, but actually my SIM card's been in the Sony Xperia 5 Mark 5 for some time now, and I'm completely happy with it. It might be in many ways very dumb compared to what is pushing the envelope now, but it's just fine. Any thoughts on that, anyone?
I think just fine is good. I like Sony Xperias, and I think we should encourage people still to use older devices because they're still usable. And I think you and Steve have said many times it's more important actually to have security updates rather than the OS itself, because that's more cosmetic. But the security updates, that's what you really need. Is it still getting them, Ted?
Yeah, the last one is going to be in August, I do believe, 2026, and then it's going to be dropped. At the moment, it's in quarterlies, and it's last year. But even after that, Steve, you talk all the time about the fact that the Surface Duo is still getting Play System updates, and you're not really concerned much about all this, are you?
Yeah, the thing is, the security updates for the kernel, they're important in the first few years because there might be architectural and security problems, so you look for security updates. But once you get beyond 2 or 3 years of advice, it's not the target of any hackers out there. So you might what's critical then is actually staying up to date with all the very latest apps, all the latest services and all the things the developers are doing. And they hook into the Google Play System updates, all the APIs. So as long as your device has got up to date Google Play System updates, and you can check this in settings, general system about usually, and tapping on the Android version number in any Android phone. As long as you're up to date with Play System updates, you're completely 100% compatible with every new app that comes out. So my Surface Duo here, which is four and a half years old now, has got May 2026 Play System. And any new Android app that comes out compiled, as long as there's not no minimum Android version implied, all the different API calls and the system calls and the things, all the functionality, it will just do because it's got the latest Google APIs. And I think that's often underlooked.
I think there's just one element that can be a factor, and I've had this before. I know it applies to my original Surface Duo, because I used to occasionally use some work apps on my devices. Because some of those require the device to have the company's policy stuff put on it. If the device is old and not getting updates anymore, there comes a point where they just won't let you use that device anymore because it's not getting updates in their mind. It's not up to the latest protection. I haven't tried it for a while. I need to see by putting it onto one of the older a different older device whether it will work or not. A good example is, I think my Tab S8 is, I think it still gets security updates. I can't remember. Ted, do you still have
it? Yeah, my Tab S8 has got Android 16 now, and it's getting security updates for another year.
In that case, I can't try that one for another year then.
Right.
But I'll have to try something else. But yeah, that's the only time. But I haven't checked it for a while, so on a recent device.
Okay, yeah, Steve?
A good test really is if banking apps still work on a device, because I suspect that a lot of these third-party corporate applications, they use as their cue whether the financial institutions accept that version of Android in that device. And so if three or four major banking apps all work on this Surface Duo, then as far as I'm concerned, anything should work. Once the banking apps stop working on device because it's four or five Android versions out of date, that's the point where corporate stuff, I suspect, also starts falling off the bottom.
It's funny you say that, Steve. That's quite often when a customer comes in and says, I've got to change phone. My banking app doesn't work.
Yeah.
Well, for our organization, they really strictly control all that stuff. So they wouldn't even let you bring a device and allow you. They want total control over all the deployments. It's iOS, right? So they have all the apps we have. We have a separate app store. It's a super, super highly controlled device. So they would never even consider letting you take any any of your own devices, even if you have an iPhone, and put your personal device and have them add their software suites on top of it and layers of protection. Again, my case is unique for where I work, but you know, if they're giving you a phone, they usually like to control all that. So, which was hilarious because they handed me this device and I was like, yeah, I'm going to use it. And he goes, oh, you know, you can use that for like regular apps. And I was like, what do you mean regular apps? He's like, yeah, if you want to like put Facebook on and stuff like that. I said, look, whoa. So you want me to take a government issued device and put my Instagram on my personal Instagram on this so you guys can have access to it? That's not going to happen. People actually do that. They go, oh, yeah, all the time. I was like, yeah, that's not happening. Sorry, didn't mean to help. It's just going to have bank stuff on it. It's going to have work stuff. That's literally all it's going to be. But yeah, it's for those kind of corporations like to Steve, that's they want total. And we just got new 17Es. That's the one I just got, and I'm not a fan of it. I don't like it. I wish they had made me a bigger device, but apparently I'm not a big enough big shot to get a larger phone. So, but yeah, those are good points by Jeremy and Steve for sure.
Yeah, Joe, if people come into your shop though saying I have to get a new phone because my banking app doesn't work anymore, that's probably God's way of saying, yes, you do need a new phone. It's now been 4 or 5 or 6
absolutely,
years.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah.
What else?
I rub my hands together then. It's like, this is an easy one.
Talking of iOS, we are aware that there has been an Apple event today. While Sam and Steve are here, is there anything that anyone wants to say about that? Not that we're big fans of Apple, as you know, on this show, but it would be timely to at least air it if anyone knows or has any views about anything.
I have finished watching most of it. I haven't caught every minute, but I got the gist. It's just to mention a few questions and observations. One is that they've gone big on Siri AI, and they've explicitly said that this is tying in with Google's Gemini framework. But they've emphasized how your stuff, things you ask about it, queries, your facts, your data, never leaves your device or your what they call their private compute, so your space in their cloud. Whereas I kind of like the fact that Gemini, which I have as an app on the iPhone and on Android and on my Mac, Gemini is just everywhere in my life, as it is yours, Ted. I like the fact that Gemini doesn't keep all my stuff private on a device. Gemini knows everything about me, and whichever device I log into, it's got all of my previous history, all of my queries going back to the year dot, and I can resume anything, and it's got the context, and it itself refers back to previous things I've asked to answer future questions. So I know Apple's kind of doing the right thing with their privacy aspect, but I kind of like Google's aspect. As long as it stays within my Google account, I want them to know everything I'm doing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I do agree. Sure. Sam?
And I would piggyback that comment with what I agree, but also remember iOS users probably don't switch their phones that often, because why are you switching phones? It's the same OS everywhere you go, right? So I would find that, you know, in the Google model for folks like us, you know, who may switch a lot or upgrade a phone, I would hope that, and I didn't watch the keynote, but I hope that Apple, if they're doing this, let's say you are upgrading from, you know, your iPhone 12 to an iPhone 17 or whatever, that you have some way to extricate that from device to device. Like, I don't know if they're going to do it on the back end because it's going to see your Apple ID and then it's going to hook into it. But if it's on device and you upgrade, or worst case, you lose it, something like that, is that data now, are you basically back to zero? Like, you have to start all over with all that stuff. So I agree with Steve, having that across account. So if you're switching phones or upgrading, that how can everything work? If you have all these automations and all these stuff set up for your learning models and prompts, now you have to start over with hallucinations and building it all on your device again from scratch. That would be kind of suboptimal for a user, I would think.
Just to say that Jeremy has said he needs to drop out. Thanks for popping in, Jeremy.
That's all right.
Catch
pleasure.
You soon. Hopefully you'll get a good turnout at the pub meet.
Yeah, I'll be there.
See you there. And have a good chat, gents. Bye.
See ya.
Steve?
Yeah, they weren't terribly clear on exactly the extent of how much the things you ask Siri AI are actually within your Apple account. As you say, Sam, because if you upgrade from phone to phone, surely most of that has to come with you. Therefore, it must be either transferred at sort of Wi-Fi direct time at setup time, or held in some form in some secure container online. It's not entirely clear. I only watched the keynote an hour ago, though, so I'm still catching up. I do have a couple of just notes I think that are important for the generic sort of questions, really. First of all, you know, we've had this whole Brexit palaver 5, 6, 7 years ago, and Apple are now saying that Siri AI is not coming to the EU for the time being because of legal reasons to do with privacy. So my question to you, Joe, and Ted, and I guess not Sam, because he gets it in America. But given that the UK is not part of the EU anymore, does that mean that we do get Siri AI because we're not part of the EU, or do they still class as the UK as part of Europe? I'm confused.
It always feels like a grey area, doesn't it? Because
yeah.
If you take the example of the battery capacities, then the OEMs are treating the UK as just the same as the EU, even though we're not in the EU. So we get the same restrictions as they do on batteries, even though we could be completely bypassed it. And that is argued on the basis of it's not worth them doing yet another variation just for the UK. Whereas with a software suite, maybe that would be different.
Yeah, but having said that, as many people have said, having too much AI in your life in terms of spreading it around is a bad thing. I'm happy to go all in on Gemini because it is so useful and it is just the one company. So I'm happy. If I don't get Siri AI, I don't care in the slightest. I've got Gemini as a shortcut on my lock screen. I've got Gemini as an app on my app screen. I just go into Gemini every time and I'll carry on doing that for a couple of years to come at least.
I dare say others will do the same as well, Steve, because Gemini is so good on any device, really, isn't it?
Yeah. There's one third thing about the WWDC, which I think is relevant, is that they have announced, this is kind of a world first, really, that iOS 27, which is being shipped later on this year, so it's 1 year on from the iPhone 17 launch, they said it will be fully backwards compatible with all the features and AI and so forth up to the iPhone 11. So in other words, that will make it 7 full years of OS updates, which I think I've never heard specifically stated by Apple before. Do we know of any other device other than maybe Fairphone that promises 7 years of full OS updates?
Well, Motorola do now with their latest Signature and Razr Fold. And Google do with their Pixel devices, of course, as we know, and have done for a couple of years now.
Is that OS updates or is that just security, though?
No, that's all
Samsung
OS updates.
Samsung always have security, yeah.
Well, Samsung did as well.
Yeah. So I think there are a few, but I mean, it just comes down to, like Steve said, I mean, it's just what the problem with Motorola is, you'll get all those 7 years. Oh, we gave you 7 years of OS updates. Oh, it's year seven. Oh yeah. We moved you up 7 models. Sorry. We forgot the cadence was a little off. We did promise 7 years. We just didn't tell you when you're going to get them and what cadence that's going to be. Sorry about that. We should have been more clear.
And they tell lies. I've got, I've still got Ben Wood's, ThinkPhone here, Steve, and that they promised that was going to get Android 16 on it, and every single month I check it and the security updates come through good as gold every month, and it's still on Android 15. So Motorola, well, in this case Lenovo, I suppose, are not always good on their promises, and they do break them. And I was talking to someone just yesterday about the phone that's only available in your land, Sam, which is the Stylus, the G Stylus, which is a really, really good device. But they push those out with one single OS update and they pitch the price accordingly. And Motorola, except for those two flagships that I've just quoted, they're not doing 7 years. They've agreed to 7 years on those two, and that's a lot. And also, the other thing, Steve, is that OEMs like Honor, for example, and some of the other Far East manufacturers are giving more updates to the EU members countries because they're being forced to. Whereas a good example is the P600, sorry, the Honor 600 Pro and the non-Pro, which are being given 6 OS updates in EU, but only 4 if you happen to live in Malaysia or somewhere. So there are games being played with that whole thing. And at least with Apple, you do get it globally, and that's your lot. End of story. Very much like Samsung, I think.
Sorry, Steve, go on.
Just looking on Gemini, asking about the Galaxy S26 Ultra as an example, and it said they committed to 7 years of software support, which includes major OS upgrades and security patches. So some of the manufacturers, they are kind of using wishy-washy language to hedge their bets, and you may not get a full seven levels of OS updates.
I think that I think that they will do that. I trust Samsung to do that, and I trust Google to do that. I don't particularly trust Motorola to do that. but they play the game, some of them with their arm twisted behind their back. The other thing to mention, Steve, is that I've still got the iPhone SE 2020 here. And it might still get updates going forward. Well, I think it's finished now, but you don't get all of the functions. It's a bit like the whole Pixel thing, is that you've got to buy newer hardware for all those functions to work, because the hardware doesn't support those features going back. They might put the OS on it, but actually half the stuff doesn't work. And if it does, it might work really, really slowly and badly and give you a really bad experience.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Although do note that SE 2020 is the old design with the smaller screen and the home button, which is a legacy thing from 10 years ago, whereas every device that's full screen swipe gestures modeled after the iPhone 10, for example, and as with many modern Android phones, once you're in that modern world of full screen, longer portrait and so forth, then more things will work. With that particular device, you're kind of hamstrung by the form factor and the aspect ratio, I think.
2020, Steve. 2020. It says it in the name. And that's 6 years ago.
Fair enough. That's a good point. Yeah. The newer features in these OS updates on all platforms, they usually have limitations to exactly which devices they work on. In the Apple AI case, Apple Intelligence, as they call it. Yeah, only the sort of the last couple of years worth of devices can actually run that. And that's going to carry on.
Always on displays.
There
are little examples littered all over the whole the Apple experience where stuff just doesn't work. They say, oh, we're great. We give you software right the way back to so-and-so. But actually, half of it, it doesn't work.
Yeah, that's a fair comment. I think there's always caveats to all this. It may run your 2020. I think it will get iOS 27, perhaps. But even so, yeah, 90% of the things that people have been enjoying since it came out, they won't work on your phone. Sorry about that.
Joe, you were interrupted there.
Oh, no, I was just going to say it's quite clear that unless OEMs are forced to give us 7 years or X amount of years, they won't. Like you say, with Honor, they're only doing it because they have to. It's clear they'll do as little as possible.
And outside of Apple and Pixels with Google and possibly Samsung, who is going to keep their phone for 7 years anyway? All right, Fairphone, you might argue that's a niche example. But if you've got the average Honor phone, you're going to be wanting to upgrade anyway. All right, we've got this argument of being able to hand it down to family members and that kind of thing, and it'll still work. But Apple, Google and Samsung, I think, are the big three who will make sure that that is adhered to.
I was talking to Wilkin Lee. He'd done various PR jobs for various companies. I think Wilkin's still Motorola, isn't he?
He is, yeah.
Yeah, I was talking to him at a pub meet about 2 years ago, and he was saying for every single firmware update, like a monthly update or so and so for a particular device, it costs something like $1 million. It's some incredible figure, and due to all the certification and testing and backwards and forwards and paperwork, and I'm not entirely sure $1 million is right, but it did emphasize that every single update for every single hardware variant, for every single region, it does cost these companies money, which is why the smaller manufacturers just can't afford to push out all the updates we might want. Whereas Apple, Google, Samsung, they've got money coming out of their backsides and they can do all the updates they want.
And I would argue as well, like we've already mentioned, sorry, Sam, I'll let you go in a sec. With the updates, a lot of non-techie people are actually scared of them. It's quite funny. They don't want to do them. They don't want something to change their phone that they like. I get it quite a lot. I'm like, it's nothing to be scared of. This is fine. You probably won't even notice any differences. But yeah, there is a fear, which is funny for us techies.
Well, and I guess, Ted, here's how I see it from a different perspective. It's kind of, I wouldn't probably keep the same phone for 7 years, but wouldn't it be nice that if you knew that a Pixel 4 XL would still get updates? So if you went and buy one on the secondhand market because you just really like the hardware and you're waxing nostalgic one day, because you know, obviously when I get an LG, you know, V60, for instance, if I want to go do that, I realize it's never going to get an update again. But it would be kind of funny if, like, oh, yeah, I came back to a phone. I tried some different stuff, but I wanted to go and buy an old, like, HTC One U12 Plus. And it still was getting updates because they do a seven-year cadence. So you're like, oh, okay, that's pretty good. And now you can use an old phone. I would love to use a BlackBerry, but it's stuck on Android 8. So now you're in the situation where the OS is so old, apps won't work on it. And, you try to sideload older versions, and it just doesn't work right. So, but, you know, that I think I see it from that perspective. Why not? I mean, yeah, you won't keep your phone for 7 years, but maybe I'll go back to get a 5-year-old Pixel. I'll go get a Pixel 6 because I just like that design, and I can get it for $70.
But Sam, it's only good if they're going to offer a free battery replacement to go with it, because they don't tend to last the 7 years, do they?
No, not yet.
So that's another factor too.
I mean, but maybe if you can get that, I mean, that's probably something. So, but I think that's something that I think iOS people are used to. I will see a lot of people. I've seen people that have had
Apple users
and 8 year old iPhones and got a couple battery replacements through Apple Care or whatever. And it's they're perfectly happy with their hardware. It does for them. My wife was kind of in that same boat. I mean, she just went to the 16. She was actually really considering just replacing the battery in her 12 just because she likes the phone. Just didn't want to go through all the hassle of setting up and moving all over. And, well, I think some old versions of would move your apps around maybe, or a change of the UI totally. And there's like, oh, I don't know where anything's at. It's all colorful and crazy and buttons don't work and switches are weird. So I get it. I see it from both sides, but you're right, Joe.
Going back to what Steve said, though, about the $1 million for each update, you know, LG are not going to be ploughing in $1 million just so that some nerd and geek can one day pick up a phone from their drawer and charge the battery up and expect it to be charged up. The reality is the argument that Motorola make. As we detest the argument is that their servers know which phones are being used. And so they prioritize any updates for those, even to the extent of squelching on promises of updates. If they decide that there's not enough of them in use, they will ditch it and not do the updates. So there's a middle road in there, I think, between what Steve is saying about the cost of doing it and what you're saying, Sam, about how nice it is to be able to have that in a drawer and pull it out and it still works.
Yeah, there's another factor as well, like why there's such a cost involved, because it does truly need to be tested correctly, because if they brick X amount of devices because they've sent out a new update, that's not a good look, is it?
No.
And we'll definitely be moaning as techies then that they've bricked thousands of devices.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm still interested in OnePlus, though, Sam. I'm going to draw you on that again, because I think that the you got the 15, haven't you?
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. Joe and I were talking about the whole OnePlus thing, and we both like it as well. One of the annoying things for me is that the always on display is a bit hit and miss, but that's another matter, I suppose. But then there's also this R series, which is significantly cheaper, and for all intents and purposes, it's pretty much the same phone without Qi charging, mm-hmm. isn't it?
Right.
And a slight downgrade on the camera.
The R series is, I mean, especially if you're getting, I mean, maybe the material is a little different, but I don't ever see OnePlus really getting really overly cheap, or they don't, you know what I mean? It's not like, oh man, I mean, you can clearly tell that that's a budget friendly device, right? You know, they do a pretty good job with colors, and I've actually had, I think I had the 12, I have a 12R or 13R. I can't remember, but I thought it was actually a pretty good phone, all things considered. And I was okay with not having wireless charging. That's a nice to have for me, but it's not really, it's never been a deal breaker for me because of how my workflow and my life is. So I think the R series are really, really good value for money. If you want to get into that ecosystem and get a OnePlus and not have to get the high end stuff, I think it's a really good idea. I like the R stuff.
Cool. Okay. So that is still on the kind of back burner for me. One of these days I'll get a OnePlus again, as long as they don't go out of business and stop moving stuff out of China, I suppose. But that's another matter. Joe, your SIM card is in the Razer Fold still. What about the Magic 8 Pro?
The Magic 8 Pro has got no SIM in at the moment. Because I know I've got that for the whole year, I'm not so worried about, and I did my review of that earlier doors, didn't I? So my secondary SIM is in the 600 Pro at the moment. Although I really should do something with this Moto Edge 70, but the skinny phones don't really excite me, especially when the camera's meh, really. It's not the best camera system, as to be expected.
Yep, Steve? Muted, Steve? Unmute, Steve.
Rookie mistake. I've got a question for Joe, actually, on the subject of Honor, because one of the things that Apple just announced, I thought that looks familiar, it's called Extend or Frame, and then the idea being, as you can imagine from the name, you take a photograph and you think, oh, I just clipped the edge of the tower off, or I wish I got that something else that's slightly larger, or the person smaller in the frame. And I believe that Honor phones have been doing this for a while. Is it just Honor, or are there other Android manufacturers who do an extend or expand frame feature?
I'm not too sure. I don't know if Samsung do something as well, no, potentially.
The Honor does. Do you remember we were testing with it?
The Honor definitely does. Right. I was just wondering if anyone else did as well. Okay. I'm not sure. I feel like Samsung do as well. I need to look into that now, actually. But Honor do it very, very well. I've been impressed. It's called outpainting.
That's right. I was trying to think of the word outpainting.
Outpainting, yeah.
It was very
good feature. Yeah. I really enjoy it. Apple's going to do that as well then?
Yeah, it's coming in the next software update in the autumn. They also announced a reframe feature, which is kind of interesting. I don't know whether you've experienced this on other platforms, but they do a feature at the moment called spatial something or other, whereby you shoot a photograph and then it AI works out what's foreground and what's background, and you can kind of view it as in sort of mock 3D, and you can, as if you can see past the people in the photograph and adjust their framing of the background. And they've now formalized this to reframe, so you can take a photograph, just a 2D photograph, but it keeps some spatial information, maybe a bit like the old Nokia 9 PureView, Ted, and later on you can say, no, I want it to see it from slightly to the left or slightly from below or above, and you can kind of reframe it and give it more 3D. So that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, that is, you're right, and that did kind of work with the 9 PureView, but not quite as well as it does now. It's worth noting also that all these Honor tools are in cahoots with Google tools. So Honor, ever since the P400, which I've got here, they have been quite upfront about that. They're doing deals with Google, and it's the Google software behind the scenes that are doing this. So I don't know if that's also true with Apple, with their newfound handshake with Google. Do you know, Steve?
I think the imaging stuff and the imaging features are genuine Apple first party features. I don't think that's tied in with Gemini at all. But the same algorithms, the same ideas are being used across the board, aren't they, with many different companies. These are just features we will expect to see in any photo editor, in any phone in a couple of years' time, I think.
Sure. Okay, so back to you, Joe. You've got the 600 Pro to review. No, you've done that.
WhatsApp user on iOS or
Android. Oh,
standby. I've just turned it on and notifications have all buzzed in. I've got the 600 Pro to review. They didn't actually tell me when they wanted it back, though. So I'm going to assume it's not anytime soon. What else are you going to say, Ted?
I was watching somebody reviewing the 600 Pro, Pro last night on YouTube, and they, whoever it was, I can't remember now, was saying that it actually it's a much more interesting device than one would have. In actual fact, you were also talking about it on Nomad Tech Project, weren't you? And you were kind of saying that it's not as iPhone-ish as people were saying.
Yeah, it's not. It, you know, the looks of it actually, because it's more of a frosted finish on it, it feels pixel-esque. I don't know. It's obviously it's Android under the hood anyway, so that gives it more of a pixel feel as well. I guess they do software-wise copy a lot of Apple stuff, but I think when they do copy Apple stuff, they do it quite well. I know you're not a fan, Ted, at all, but the stuff they do copy, I think they do really well. It's a bit like Marmite, though. I know a lot of people that pick up an Honor and they use it and they love it, and I know lots of people that pick it up and they return it straight away and they just can't get on with it. I love it. I really like it myself. And there's image-to-video 2.0. I don't know if I've mentioned that yet. Yeah. What's interesting about it is you can make prompts now, and you can add more than one image as well. You can do all sorts. There's some set prompts you can do, but you can do freestyle prompts. So it's really good because you can educate yourself on how to best do a prompt to get the image you want. It's quite fun to play with.
And I think that's, again, that's all on the back of Google's, what is it,
VO3, I think it is.
So they're obviously still hand-holding. Honor and Google are kind of still in bed together, aren't they? Which is interesting, given the American background and the whole Huawei thing, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Because that's an exclusive sort of launch, the image to video that Honor do, so it's a close relationship they've got. They do have their own suite of AI stuff as well. I'm not sure what's Honor's own and what's Google, though, for a lot of it's hard to sort of know, because obviously they don't separate it, they try and keep it sort of more fluid.
A lot of the Honor UI is actually really interesting and really well thought out. I have to agree. What really annoyed me about my 400 Pro was that the always on display stopped working. Well, it didn't stop working, but it just occasionally I looked at it and it was off. And I thought, this is exactly what OnePlus ended up doing and what Oppo do. And some of those kind of BBK group phones, what used to be BBK, and it just really annoyed me that Honor was going down the same. Anyway, that's a particular hobby horse of mine. So,
well, they are aggressive with stopping things, aren't they? Like, for example, I just put the 600 Pro on quickly, and all of a sudden, loads of notifications flooded in. So yes, they do aggressively stop things in the background.
Steve, tell us about, as I said earlier, I've got my SIM card in the Xperia again, and I know that you've got the One Mark 5 there on the same kind of basis. Have you been using it? Do you still get to go out and take photographs with it particularly? Do you use it for sound, or does it in reality sit in the drawer most of the time?
I use it a couple of times a week, I'd say. I love getting it out. I love the feel in the hand. I use it naked because it's got either the texture on the side and the back. It just feels great. Every other phone I've got, including the iPhones, they're all in TPU cases. All you ever feel is plastic and TPU. But the Sony, you actually get to feel the real phone. Well, I guess the Surface Duo is also kind of naked. But yeah, the texture on the Sony is lovely. I love taking photographs with it. I love the naturalistic, the image textures you get. Everything, things aren't all enhanced. I know on the Samsungs and on the iPhones you can turn on to RAW or Pro RAW and you get the same idea, but then you get huge images with the Sony, just with a standard JPEG. You can kind of, going back to the Lumia and Nokia 808 days, where you just see it photographs what you're in front of, not some hyper real hyper enhanced version. So I enjoy that. I love watching videos, and every time I start watching YouTube on the Sony, I get sucked in with the dynamic vibration and the great sound and the front facing speakers and the wonderful picture quality. There's so much to like on it. If I wasn't wedded to iOS at the moment, I think my main sim would probably be in that Sony One 5 right now. And I'm trying to get the one Mark 8 out of Sony PR. I contacted them this morning, and I'm kind of hopeful that the next couple of weeks they might be able to loan me one for a few weeks.
Oh, right. Cool.
That'd be great.
Yeah, that sounds good, because that new one has had some compromises. It's had some bad press and good press. Certainly the physical redesign. But also, you know, tinkering about with the cameras again, and taking away the telephoto macro. I'm not sure in the version 7 they did that, but certainly in the version 6 I had for a while, that telephoto macro was all I did with it. So I think that's a bit of a shame if they take that away.
It depends on the actual focal length of the telephoto they've put in, because they've got a whole new telephoto system for the One Mark 8. And as with many phones I've got here, if you go into the telephoto mode, you can zoom in on things as long as you're not, you know, as long as you're within the viable focal range. You can take great telephoto macro with almost any phone. It's just that the Sony One Mark 5, One Mark 6, I think it was, they were particularly good at that because of just the physics of it. So I'd love to test it. I suspect with this new telephoto system with high megapixels, I think that will do pretty good telephoto macro as well. I think I saw that in some of the reviews as well. The things that people didn't like about it were the price, obviously. Duh.
Yeah.
But maybe you can pick it up secondhand or on a contract or something maybe similar. And also the fact that the camera interface had sort of AI infused and suggested looks, most of which were complete rubbish. So as long as you can turn that AI feature off and you can get it for a good price, then I think the One Mark 8 has got a lot going for it.
Yeah, definitely. Joe, will you get your hands on through O2 or anything with one?
No, sadly not. They're not at any networks in the UK now, because I used to get them on my contract every year, didn't I? I had some free headphones and a free TV via that route as well. So that was nice. But yeah, they stopped doing them. And it's such a shame, because I would most certainly love to get hands on. Because when we originally saw the renders, I hated the look of it. But actually, it's really grown on me now. So yeah, that doesn't put me off at all.
I disagree. I think that the old look was much nicer. It was classy looking.
Yeah, no, I agree with that, but I don't hate it now like I did when I first saw it. Because I thought, wow, that is disgusting at first.
And Sam, you stand no chance at all. Yeah, I know that one of your regular guests on No Man Tech Project is, I can't remember who it is now, but perhaps you'll remember, Joe.
Andrew.
He's got and uses a Sony Xperia as his number one device, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's a big fan of them. I've had a couple of Xperias. I had the, well, not many, just two, I think. The ZX1 back in the day, and then the one that Dan told me not to buy. I watch a video when he's making videos. He's like, it overheats, it's not that great. I go, great, that's the phone I bought. Should have watched this video before I did that purchase off of Swappa. But hey, you know, whatever. So actually, I like the phone. I like the devices. The funny thing I was telling Joe, and I mentioned it, is I've only seen one other person in the U.S. that I've ever come across that actually had an Xperia. It was like, and it was enough to stop me in my tracks, because I just happened to be standing next to him in a food place. And I was like, I looked over like, do you have an Xperia? He goes, yeah, really? I go, yeah, I do. I do too. I don't have one now, but he's like, oh, really? And that was the only time in all the years I've ever seen anybody have an Xperia device. It's crazy. They're not very popular here.
Steve?
Just to say, on the subject of this Sony Xperia 1 Mark 8 and the redesign on the back with the camera island, they had to do that because this new telephoto that they put in is relatively huge, with one of the biggest sensors on a telephoto I think I know about. So they literally could not fit it into the existing design where the cameras were vertical. They had to go horizontal. And I think they've done a good job of it. I think it looks great. Once you get past the fact it doesn't look like the old Sonys, I think they've done a really good job and it looks great. I hope they've retained enough of the same texture on the back so that you don't have to use it in a case. But then again, if you've just spent £1,400 on a phone, you're probably going to put it in a case anyway, which would be rather a shame. But they had to do the redesign.
It's a shame, though, that they didn't do the... I've got the, right in front of me now, the Xperia 10 Mark 7, and they've done the... They've changed the... orientation of the cameras on the back, but they've done a pixel with it and they've made a shelf going right across it just looks like the back of a pixel. And I don't know why I don't know if you have any insight into that, Steve, in relation to what you just said, why Sony couldn't have followed the same design ethic as the 10 series.
I think they probably could. That they're also the fact that the main camera is also quite large. I'm just wondering whether there would even be room for the two ultra-wide large main sensor and that huge telephoto all in one strip, and presumably you'd have to have the flash there and other sensors. So I just think they might have run out of room. I think they were forced into this by their choice of camera sensors, but the camera specs themselves are so terrific that I'm prepared to forgive it, and I really hope I get lent one for review.
Fair enough. Okay, quick mention for the Jim Fowl and the Pebble Time 2 watch, which he sent over to me. And I've set it up the day before yesterday, and I'm really impressed with it. I know that we don't talk a huge amount about watches. I think Joe is probably the biggest watch fan amongst us. But I there's something about it. I remember back in the day, I did have an original generation Pebble watch, and it was kind of, something and nothing. But this is working really, really well. The application which you get for the phone is really done well. It's very kind of geeky and nerdy and old-fashioned and kind of blocky. It actually gives me the feel of Nothing Phone. So it's got this community, and it's even got a website. You can like Nothing Phone, it's got this kind of community developer thing online, and you can go in there and you can develop. You can just download the open source free tools if you've got the skills and the know-how, and just develop anything for this little watch. It's an e-ink watch, e-paper. It's a color one for the first time. And I really like it, you know. I'm in the middle of writing a review about, what my initial findings. And at the moment, it's got button-driven UI. So on the right-hand side, you've got three buttons, physical buttons. And on the left-hand side, you've got one button. The one on the left pretty much acts like a back button, back-to-base button. But the other three, you get prompts on the edge of the screen as to which one to press for what you want to do. But the news is that in development, because this watch is not yet out there for the public, Jim bought this on a Kickstarter thingy. He's got it early, but in development from the team, they're making the touchscreen actually much better. Now, when you start downloading watch faces and apps from these people that are developing on this the forum that I just mentioned, some of them have got touch stuff working. So clearly it can work, and Pebble have said they're going to make this work. And I think that when they do, when the interface is a bit less button dependent and a bit more touch friendly, it'll be really good. So in order to light it up, you need to tap the screen. And yeah, if you're I'm in a dark room now, and frankly, it's a little hard to see. I've got it on maximum brightness, but I can see it. It's fine. The benefit, like you would argue with a Kindle or e-ink reader of any description, is obviously when you've got good light and it's not eating battery up. I charged this fully up when I arrived. I think it was 3 days ago, in fact. And I noticed today that it was still on 92%. And I've been tinkering with it and playing with it and setting it up and attaching it to this phone and that phone and doing all sorts of testing. Still on 92%. And they reckon that the battery should last, under optimal conditions, up to a month, which is really, really impressive. And all down to that e-ink screen that is sipping the battery. So very impressed with it. Steve, we had, I think Miriam Joar was tied up with Pebble previously. We had her on PSC, didn't we? And she spoke in glowing terms. Well, she would, because she worked for them, about the Pebble watch. But I think that this new one is definitely a step forward. And it looks like it's going to retail at about £200. I like the idea of it. Do you know anything about it yourself?
Only that I saw you being offered it, and I think via our email group, and I thought, shall I stick my hand up? Shall I volunteer for a playtime with this? I kind of fancy that a go with this as well, Ted, if that's all right, at some point. And there's no hurry. My worry would be that although the battery life is great and so forth, the more features they add, and especially to do with the touchscreen and live activities and so forth, then that will start to reduce the battery life. The whole beauty of the Pebble, the original Pebble, was that it was nice and simple. And the this new Pebble Time 2, is that the right name? Again, it's designed to be much simpler to use and to present less information and less interruption to your life than the traditional Apple Watch or Google Pixel Watch or Galaxy Watch. It's not trying to be so ambitious. And so I'd like to keep it the experience simple, and I'm eager to see what Pebble do to end users when they finally release this, as this is the default. This is what our vision is. It will last a month if you have it doing these activities and these apps. And I'm curious to see what that will be.
Yeah. Joe?
Did you say it's the Pebble Time 2? Because I can see one here called the Pebble Round 2. And that
Yeah, the round one is the same thing, apparently, except that it's just a different shape, yeah.
Yeah, because that appeals to me, because I like the more classic round clock face. But yeah, I'd love to play with one, definitely. They look like smart devices.
It's a really nice little display, and what I like most about it, I think, is this kind of back end community, which a community of kind of enthusiast developers, very much like in Nothing Phone's world, and it's just really refreshing and interesting. I just looked at it now, and it's on 80%. So I think that's probably 3 days down. So I'm not going to get a month out of it, and actually. When you start to talk to the users in the community, they're not getting a month out of it either. They're saying with average use about half of that. But even with half of that, that's still very, very good. Now, Motorola claim that their watches will do 16 days, but they don't. In Joe and I's testing, they do half of that as well. So whatever they say in real world use is half of it.
50%,
but that's okay. If the little Pebble watch does 15 days, then I'm okay with that. But anyway, yeah, initial impressions is that I'm really, really impressed. Sam, have you any thoughts on that? Any sign of it in America, or perhaps more sign of it in America?
No, I haven't muted? Seen much of that at all. No. I'm on mute. Yeah.
Okay.
So I haven't seen much about it, but yeah, I see the, you know, the Google fitness trackers. I've seen other kinds of, I'm not really a fan of a watch for me, because I have a Pixel 4 and all the other watches, but I don't really use a lot of the apps on them. I really just use fitness tracking and some sleep every once in a while. So, I don't have a whole lot of, I like battery life. I used to have an old, the Mi Band series. I had those for a long, long time. And then, you know, getting all that battery life, I thought it was a lot better.
You mean the Xiaomi thing? Was that the Mi Band?
Yeah, the Mi Bands. I started with like a 3, and they were always like super affordable, like $50. I mean, really, really nice, you know? And also battery lasted a week. The only thing I ever could do, I could never get all the bands that were the silicone. After a while, they start to kind of irritate my arm a little bit, and I still have a problem now with watch bands. Yeah, I mean, I have like a fabric elastic one, and it's pretty decent, but every couple of days or so, I have to take it off. And also, this is what I recommend for people is you wash these every once in a while, especially if you have the fabric kind. I mean, if you have like a silicone or whatever, you know, take it off and actually scrub it and, you know, sanitize it. And I don't think a lot of people do that, especially these fabric ones, and they get pretty stinky and gross and other than else, you know. And so I would make sure at least every once in a while, every month or so, I take it off and just put it in a little small bag and put it in the laundry and kind of get them all cleaned up to make them nice and, you know, comfortable. So
sure. And that leads us also to this new Google thing, doesn't it? I can't even remember what it's called now. Something Air, is it?
Fitbit. It's Air. Actually, I was looking at it. It was the Google Fitbit Air is what it's called.
Is it? I thought they dropped the word Fitbit out of everything and were replacing it with Google.
That's on their website. I just checked because I thought the same thing, Ted, like you said. Yeah, I was just looking it up, and they apparently in the United States, they offer two different versions. They have one that's the regular $99 one, and then they have a Steph Curry basketball player. So he has like it's a little bit more of a premium-looking band, different colorway, and it's $129. So, yeah, it looks pretty interesting. I kind of like that. It's pretty straightforward. The only thing is they've been kind of complaining, but yeah, they complain about the Gemini and they're pretty aggressive and it's kind of almost pestering you every once in a while. And the guy said, just get the basic and keep that. Don't get the premium because it kind of hassles you all the time. It nags you.
They've copied Whoop, haven't they? The Whoop band.
Yeah.
Basically.
It's pretty nice. I like it. It's minimal. It looks pretty sharp. I might give it a go if I'm looking to have something that's more aligned with that and not necessarily having a Pixel watch with better battery. I might take a swing on it. I don't know. It looks pretty good. Interesting.
But any time you want to know anything about what it's doing, you've got to look at your phone.
Right, exactly. So it doesn't go for notifications, and that's the only problem. Or if you really want to be, I don't know how that would work, but you basically wear it on one wrist and wear your watch on the other. You'd be that guy, right? You can just kind of duel it up, right? And you think, oh, it's just like a sweatband. It's cool. It's no big deal. It's just, it's all good. You can do them both. I don't know how that's going to work.
Somebody I saw who was reviewing it said they were doing just that. They were wearing the band when they were doing exercise and stuff, and then when they finished all of that and sleeping as well, and then when they were doing everything else, they'd have the watch on. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That's the only drawback. Yeah. So
I love how it's described as discreet, but then if you looked at the berry color. It couldn't be any less discreet. Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, you might be able to flag down aircraft at Heathrow with the thing, just stand out in the middle of the runway and just kind of flag them down. It's like, yeah, they'll see you for sure. Yeah, it's very non-discreet.
Indeed. Right. Okay, then. Thanks very much, Sam and Steve, for joining us. We'll wrap things up and let you go. And Steve, we're going to have you back on the show for show 900, which is on the 29th of June. So hopefully we'll have something a bit special for that show, Steve.
Absolutely. I think given that I've been ploughing through and reliving the past in the 2000s with all my classic Symbians and Nokias, I think we might do something just angling a little in that direction, because you, of course, had many of the same devices back in the day. We could do a bit of reminiscing, I think.
Yeah, I think that'd be a great idea. So hopefully, Joe, you can keep up with that, even though you're younger than us.
I would just enjoy sitting there listening, to be honest. So,
yeah.
Pretty much
what he does on the Nomad Tech Project every day. So, yeah. And it's a little self-deprecating. Well, anyways, I always appreciate what you guys do. I love the show. I'm a big fan. And thanks, Steve, for always popping in and giving feedback and commentary. And I it's good to see you in the chats. I really always appreciate it. It's one of my things I very much enjoy, that you participate. So thank you.
Yes, we'll have to get him both on as guest again.
Yeah,
absolutely. We'll see. We can carve out some time. Our guest list is pretty minimal, so anytime that you're available, Steve, just reach out, and we'd always be a pleasure. You and Ted are both always welcome on the show anytime you'd like to come on.
Thanks, Sam. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Take care, everyone.
Bye for now. Cheerio.
Bye.
So, Joe, we'll wrap things up now with the basic furniture of the show as normal. First of all, we'll go to photo of the week, and we both picked one of those. So you go first with one from Marek.
Yeah, Marek Pavlovsky is just walking in the rain in Brancaster Staithe, Norfolk. This was taken on his S23 Ultra and his Free X telephoto lens. He shot it in Expert Raw, and he adjusted a few of the levels in the Samsung Galaxy app. So all on the device, excellent. It's a beautiful, very warm image with some cloud and some sea. It's a perfect wallpaper picture, isn't it, for a phone or a tablet maybe even. And I just love the warm tones, and you can see the rain in the water in the foreground. I like the darker elements as well, and the cloudscape, and I just love it. I don't know what you think, Ted.
And I hadn't noticed the drops of rain on the water, so well spotted, because that actually is a really nice feature, as it kind of goes across between the very dark foreground and the orange reflection. And the oranges are just lovely, aren't they? I don't know how much he's adjusted those in there to make that even more orangey, possibly a fair bit, but it's just a lovely image with that boy almost exactly central in the frame, isn't it?
Yeah. You could make a clock out of it, couldn't you? It's so central there.
Yeah. but yeah, a really angry sky and lovely shades. And so, yeah, really, really good. So good pick there from Marek. Apparently that was taken at Brancaster Staithe in Norfolk, which is interesting. Yeah. I picked a shot by Chris Bates, which was apparently it's a mammoth wasp, which he saw in Mallorca. And he's taken this on an Oppo Find X9 Pro. And it is, on the last PSC photography podcast, I was saying that nature images don't interest me much, like flowers and insects and animals, but when they're done really, really well, they are incredibly impressive. And you can see here from what we've got in front of us here, I'll put a link in the show notes to Chris's post, because he also published the uncropped version. So he's cropped one and not cropped one. And you can see what he's done. He's raised the shadows a bit in the cropped version, and he's changed the composition a bit. But actually, I like both of them. I think they're really good and lovely colours, and very, very sharp on those hairs on the legs. Yeah, apparently this was in Mallorca. So any thoughts on those?
Yeah, I love this. Even the little hairs on his back as well, look. Very hairy little bag. You can see why it's called mammoth wasp, definitely.
Yeah, it looks really big,
wonderful picture. I like the shadow underneath it as well.
Absolutely. So a lot of, because he's cropped it, a lot of that shadow has been kind of taken away a bit, including the back leg as well. But yeah, I mean, he's made a choice about the crop, and certainly what I think looks like where the eye should be is very sharp. And he's pulled some of the sharpness into the frame, I think, from the original, but very, very nice. Again, I'll put links to all of that in the show notes. And before we go, we'll just have a look at the classified, shall we? See if anything jumps out at us. There's a Pixel Watch 4 going. That's the big one, the 45mm one from Mark McCannany. And £330, nice bargain there for anyone. Very nice looking watch. I've got the 3, but the 4 does slightly change the domed glass on things, I think, and makes they've just slightly redesigned it, and it looks very nice indeed. So there's that. Anything jump out at you?
Although I'm not an iPhone user, the iPhone Air for £620 is not a bad price, is it? That's more like what it should be priced as. It comes with a lot of stuff as well. Free Spigen MagFit cases, ESR MagSafe case, Nilikum MagSafe case. There's loads of stuff with it. 6 good quality cases. So, yeah, that's a bargain, I'd say, if you want a thin phone. Only 50 charges as well, so it's not been heavily used. 15 remaining days to add Apple Care as well, which might appeal to some people.
David Botfield, although there is someone that's jumped in and sent him a private message, so you'll have to just check and see if it's still there or not. He hasn't said if it is or not, but there you go. What else have we got? There's a Google Pixel Snap charging puck, talking of Qi charging.
Yeah.
£35, David Hewitt, all in. If you've got a Pixel 10 or, a 10 Pro or whatever, that's the little device that is it is specifically for the 10 series devices, and it does look really cute. It looks like it's in pink, which is really nice. So, charging puck and stand.
Something's caught my eye, Ted. It's actually a wanted post by Gary Clark, that he's looking for a phone, but he's suggesting he's going to he might have to sell his Moto Razr Fold.
Oh yeah, I was talking to him about that.
So I wonder if that's going to come up in Classified anytime soon. Did he say?
He said that he's got to sell it because he's got to pay for a holiday.
Oh, okay.
but he didn't say when he was going to sell it, and he didn't say how he was going to sell it. Hopefully, I won't be able to afford it personally, much as no. I would love to. But I think that will go, no question at all, because the Razr Fold is the thing of the moment, isn't it?
Yeah. There's something rather unique in there. There's the Star Trek Enterprise Lego set from Borgana. I quite like the look of that. I mean, I wouldn't buy it, but it is quite cool.
Steve would like that.
Yeah, and it's even got the little Lego characters, Captain Picard, yeah. Wolf, and yeah, I love it.
Interesting little keyboard there from Alistair Harding. The Doco Alumini keyboard case for an iPad. And that looks really cute, doesn't it? It's got the chiclet keys, obviously. And it just looks like a mini keypad. It's just an Apple-style keypad or keyboard that's just been shrunk down with the trackpad at the front as well and everything. And that looks really cute.
It looks really well built for that price.
Yeah, yeah. I guess it's because it's not an Apple genuine product that it's cheaper. But yeah, that looks nice as well.
I'm talking of watches. You got the Oppo Watch X3 from Andrew Martin, because they're basically the same as OnePlus watches. That looks very smart.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like you do like your watches, don't you?
Yeah, I don't know why I like the idea, but then when I get them, I don't really use them to their max.
Yeah. Last one, I'm going to give a shout out for Charlie Winston, our co-host on PSC Photography Podcast, because he's got a Galaxy Tab S9 Ultra. That's the big one, 14.6 inches Wi-Fi. We were talking about my Tab S8 earlier, and that's just about finished with Android 16. This will get another update. And it will get a further year of security OS update and security updates. 475. It comes with two cases and a screen protector, and it looks really nice. If anyone's in the market for a really big tablet, almost like a replacement for a laptop, really, then that looks just the business. So
I will say, Ted, I've got the S8 Ultra. And various times I'm going to sell it. But it's such a great device for content consumption, whether in the kitchen, in a spare room or whatever. It's such a great tablet for the screen. It's just gorgeous. So, I can imagine this will be the same.
Cool. Anyway, there you go. That's the classifieds area of our PSC empire. And if you want to join into that group then and get involved in buying and selling, you'll need to email me and we'll talk about that, because it is a closed members only group. And so we don't just let any old riffraff in. But do talk to us about it if you want to get in and you're listening to this and you're not in. That's about it, I think, Joe. Anything else you want to talk about before we go? Shall we mention
the pub meet again as Jeremy jumped in. Yeah. So the 20th, all the details will be on MeWe, though. So I'm sure anyone interested has already seen. It'd be great to see some of you down there.
Definitely. So we'll make sure that you know about the how to get there and where it is and all the rest of it. Phones Show Chat with two S's in the middle .uk is our website, where you'll find links to all the stuff we've been talking about today. And you'll find links in your podcatcher, of course, assuming you use one. Apart from that, most of the links you'll find that mean anything to us are at tedsalmon.com, where you'll get a list of all the podcasts and all the audio podcasts and all the, what do I usually say? The MeWe groups, that's it. And you can do that. You can find out all about it there. If you get lost, then go to Podhub UK. You'll find it all there as well. PayPal.me/Hickey85 is where you can buy Joe a copy for all he does on all these shows. And PayPal.me/Ted Salmon is where you can find me and buy me a coffee for all that I do on the show. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time, I think, Joe, with Godfrey Lisk, who I don't think has been on the show before. Yeah,
no,
but he's a regular contributor in the MeWe group. So we'll find out all about him and where he's from and what he does and what sort of stuff he's using at the moment in 2 weeks' time. That'll be Monday, the 22nd of June. So we'll catch up with you then. And that'll be show 899, which will be one, obviously, before the one we talked about earlier with Steve, which is 900, which is scheduled to be the 29th of June. That's the last Monday in June, where we'll have our bit of a retro shindig, as described earlier with Steve. So that's about it, really. Thanks very much for listening, everyone. And we'll catch you in 2 weeks' time and hopefully chat with you about all sorts of things in the MeWe group in the meantime. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.